blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With the confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day. Oh, happy blessed place. Oh, happy blessed time. Oh, happy blessed path. Oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi savaha. Again and yet again, may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. suffering. If anything suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Shall we look at this morning? Renee.
You know, one of the things I've taken on this year is looking at being real.
Being real.
And authentic.
And authentic.
And I don't, it's sticking, so it must, there must be something.
Something's happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It keeps coming up, so in the line, I think. So, but I don't know what that means. Like this morning I woke up in a really bad mood. And there's a push to push it away or to not act like to that I'm not supposed to be that way.
Is it kind of like that's not real?
Of trying to push it away?
No, the thing that you're trying to push it away, is that part of it? Sorry, I think I
don't know.
So anyway, you woke up this morning, you're in a bad mood.
Mm-hmm.
There's a temptation to push it away.
But I don't know what to do with it.
You don't know what to do with it.
With the bad mood. Mm-hmm. Like, if I were alone, it wouldn't be a big deal. Like, if I would just go ahead and act it out.
Right.
You know, I would throw pots and pans, or I would, I would just be whatever it was. Like, just stomp around and... And it would pass,
right?
It would eventually pass. But there's a part that doesn't want to do that, who thinks that there's something wrong with it.
There's something wrong with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does the heart say?
That you have to pretend. I mean, that would be pretending.
To, if you just got tried to like get rid of it, that would be pretending.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. So would you say that there's something real or authentic about that? About being in bad mood?
Yeah, it feels like there is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it feels like it's just part of being human.
It's part of being human. And that's the question you're asking, isn't it? What is being real? What is being authentic?
Yeah.
What is being human? Might be another way of saying it.
Yeah, I don't know where all the emotions come from. I don't know why it's emotional.
Well, I can imagine if the normal conditioned response is to make, when you have something that's authentic, that's unacceptable to conditioning, to make that go away is a painful and unhappy thing.
Right. Yeah. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. Thank you. And so there's emotion in... how would you say it? Allowing it to be there? Seeing that that's a part of what's being there?
Yeah, I guess so. Because maybe, thank you, maybe it was, well, I've been looking at childhood lately, and expression wasn't allowed.
Expression wasn't allowed.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, or if it was, you never knew if it was going to be criticized or...
Mm-hmm.
And you were just flatline. You were mm-hmm. not sure.
So even though you might have had all kinds of things, kinds of different experiences and emotions and things coming up that would have felt good to express, that wasn't allowed in the family you grew up in. You had to flatline it.
Yeah.
You had to push it away.
Yeah. I mean, you never knew when you could or when you couldn't.
I see.
Yeah, so it was volatile. Or
it was kind of risky to try.
Yeah.
Because you never knew, and sometimes it produced something really that you didn't want to have happen.
Yeah. And I've also been looking at the karmic piece of it. That what we come with.
Mm-hmm. Got to come into this life with?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently, due to someone helping me point to it, and it feels like that's kind of been ignored in practice, in my practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a tendency to be sensitive to that incoming criticism, or, you know, some people might be tough, or,
mm-hmm.
whereas I wasn't, you know. It was just
you just went right in.
Yeah, I just went right in.
Uh-huh. Are you saying that you think maybe that's just kind of a part of the makeup of the human that you are?
Yeah.
That kind of like came into this life with that kind of sensitivity.
Yeah.
And so you were sort of defenseless. I mean, that's one way of saying it. On the other side, the way of saying it would be you were really open. And
yes.
There were, you know, you had lots of things that were happening because you're human.
Mm-hmm.
And you learned that expressing those things, it was not a, it could result in painful experiences because mm-hmm. things would come back and you couldn't help but be really open to the inputs that came back, and they just went right into places that were hurtful.
Yeah, yeah. And I saw that the openness is a gift too, or the sensitivity is a gift, because mm-hmm. I had the question of, we come with karma or predispositions, if those two are synonymous, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking they might be.
Which is really the same kind of question that you're asking about what's real, what's authentic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I had the question too of karma is labeled wrong by conditioning.
By conditioning, not by practice.
Right.
But by conditioning.
Conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And the gifts that we come with are part of it. Part of that karma, and I had the question, or I answered, it was answered in this conversation, that how the gift is also the predisposition for conditioning to get a hold of it, or to use it against us, or something like that.
That's very interesting. Let me see if I've got you on that. So, like, a gift to be open, it's kind of like... it's kind of like money. You know, money is, by itself, seems to me, is completely neutral.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be used to produce things that benefit, or they can be used to produce things that, you know, take away from, let's say. So it's kind of like that. There's an openness there. In its natural state, it's like a gift. There's a sensitivity to life. There's a... Mm-hmm. An ability to be in touch with life and be able to really sense life and respond to life.
Yeah.
But it's like a commodity, and so, kind of. And so, also, it's something that conditioning can get a hold of and use disadvantage to its advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're open to life, you're also going to be open to whatever conditioning is doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the same thing that is the gift is also something that conditioning can use.
Yeah, so conditioning in parents came in, and that openness got used against me.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I took it to heart, and then that became a way of being, of mm-hmm. not being able to express.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I keep projecting having no idea at all, but that openness has something to do with your response to practice and why you have felt drawn to practice. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, maybe willingness.
Willingness.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There's a sensitivity. There's a receptivity.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps practice has been giving you an avenue for getting in touch with that gift again after having had it. I imagine it closed down, didn't it, after you had all those experiences when you were a child?
Yeah.
I mean, you had to kind of learn to shut it down and not let things in.
Oh, yeah. Totally shut it down.
Totally shut it down.
Flatlined it.
Yeah, because you learned how to be defended instead of being open because mm-hmm. you didn't know any alternative. You didn't know how to be open and not be hurt.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And flatlining is maybe the opposite of being real.
The opposite of being real.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Say more, that's interesting.
Well, shutting all that down isn't mm-hmm. letting it be expressed or acknowledging that it's there or accepting that it's there.
Mm-hmm. So being real then is acknowledging what's there, allowing what's there to be there, accepting what's here.
Yeah.
So like with the example you started off with, did you say being in a bad mood? I think that's mm-hmm. what it was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what that is, I suppose, is a lot of feelings and, you know, just stuff going around about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, we might say, an authentic to a certain extent, an authentic experience that a human is having.
Mm-hmm.
What's not real is suppressing that or rejecting it or trying to make it go away.
Or denying that it's there. Or
calling it wrong.
Or calling it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels, what you're kind of looking at in this conversation is, what feels like being real is that, and also allowing that to be there in unconditional acceptance.
Yeah, I don't know if I've allowed that, or conditioning's allowed that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is like.
Mm-hmm. That's the opening that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting to say it that way too. That's the opening that's happening because I'm projecting that it's the openness that's the gift that makes it possible to look at that and be with that in a way that can assist it to be different, you know, to be held in a kind place instead of a judging, controlling place.
Yeah, and I think that's where the tears come in, or the feelings about it. Because I haven't been able to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all of it's kind of bottled up because of that.
Yeah.
And the possibility that you could.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. Even that there is a possibility that mm-hmm. it could. I mean, I think that realization that you can just be however you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. That it's okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to, however you are in every moment, does not have to be negotiated with conditioning.
Yeah.
And you know, valued by conditioning and judged by conditioning. It could just be how it is, and there could be a space that just allows that, just allows the expression of what's here, and that's what feels authentic.
Yeah, it feels authentic just to be able to be however you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels like a koan right there,
mm-hmm.
just that statement.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting too, because I keep seeing this as you're talking, is there's kind of like two levels of authentic. There's the experience that's happening for the human right now, and there's also the compassion and awareness that is holding that experience. You know? And it feels like both of those are ways of talking about what authenticity is. You know, maybe there's layers or levels or something.
Mm-hmm.
But they're both, seems like, do you agree that it seems like they're both a part of it?
Yeah, I don't think the compassion and awareness has been there.
Mm-hmm.
It's there, but conditioning is holding it away.
Yeah. Well, and it's you learned how to be closed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're gonna, I mean, the training is to close yourself, I imagine, to the pain,
mm-hmm.
right? Because that's what's been difficult. But unfortunately, you know, there's only one aperture, you know, and so if it's closed, it's closed to everything. So
right.
If it's closed to that, it's going to be closed to something like, you know, that unconditional love and acceptance, even though that's there more so.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a tricky place, isn't it? Because we have to learn how to be open. If we want to be open to the unconditional love and acceptance, we have to be open to the pain also.
Yeah, I think that's good to see.
Yeah, I kind of think that's one of the basic challenges that we all face.
Mm-hmm.
Is there is a little leap of faith right there that says if we can do that, we can open in that way, and that pain will be there, and that's going to be okay. That unconditional love and acceptance is there also, and that will take care of the pain. But we have to be willing to let down our defenses in order for that to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's big. Yeah.
Because that really is the transformation, isn't it? Is putting those two things together. The pain and the unconditional love and acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our survival orientation that keeps them apart. That's a part of how we survived.
That's what I was seeing when you were talking, was the piece about the whole how I'm supposed to be part of it. You know, like, there's a whole story and part of lots of stories and narrative about how I'm supposed to be. And that's the wall. You know, that's like the identity of the wall that you have to open or
mm-hmm.
break down.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's keeping the pain and the acceptance
mm-hmm.
apart,
mm-hmm.
is the should, how you should be, or what you're, the kind of person you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And you've been talking about the other alternative, which is allowing the human just to be as she is. As it is,
yeah.
And that's what's that kind of dissolves that wall, doesn't it? And those two things start to come together.
Yeah, and I've been looking at it a lot on other things, like, you know, coming onto a call and having to be ready, or, you know, just saying, "Well, I'm not ready, but you know, this is where I am right now,"
mm-hmm.
and that's all new. Just, and this is new, and you know, it's like a even wondering about how this could be done differently with the bad mood
is new.
Mm-hmm. Versus just repressing it and
mm-hmm.
being the right person, or
mm-hmm.
and you know, seeing how that the story is that the bad mood is bad energy and it affects everyone else, and you're a bad person if you act that way, or if you act on it, or... And so, I guess life will inform how to do that. Because
mm-hmm.
right now it's kind of unknown territory,
mm-hmm.
is what...
While you're having experiences of it.
I'm having experiences of it.
Mm-hmm.
to a whole new thing is opening up of how to be with that.
And realizing that that's what being at center is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I've heard Sherry say some things that mind conditioning or conditioning will go, wow, that was kind of harsh, but yet I know that there's, I mean, I can feel the authenticity in what she says.
Mm-hmm.
But conditioning would label that it's wrong, you know, and it's the same with the bad mood. It's, if it's coming from authenticity, and it's accepted, it's different than if it's just something that's conditioning's harshness or
mm-hmm.
meanness. I don't know if I'm communicating that very well, but
mm-hmm.
It's like what I'm seeing. There's no way to see from conditioning's point of view what that would look like.
Mm-hmm.
The bad mood would look like, or the way of telling someone something that is hard to tell them, or
mm-hmm.
you know, all of the things that conditioning takes over to try to cope with life, or
mm-hmm.
you know, try to make it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you're seeing that what center is just being with what actually is,
mm-hmm.
not having this other relationship with it that you're describing, this conditioned relationship with it.
Yeah. It's conditioning not involved in it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Sequoia.
That's really timely. I woke this morning thinking of, it's been a focus of mine to move toward more authenticity. And a few things arose. Thursday night I was talking and I was really experiencing that being in love and you know, it didn't take but less than 24
hours. I expected that.
Hours, you know, identified. And I could see, but the really cool thing was that I noticed that there was a belief going on that what experience that was happening just a short while ago should go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and I saw how unacceptable it is.
Wow, that's fascinating. It just got turned into its complete opposite.
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
And the minute I saw that, and I was able to just say, oh, this is what's happening right now, and I had heard someone else mention in a group some time ago about just relaxing into it when you're identified,
mm-hmm.
and just practice that, and mm-hmm. you know, say, oh, okay, that's what I got.
What we got, might as well go with it.
Might as well go with it. And was just noticed seeing, just saw the shift that happened with that. I mean, you know, just actually relaxing and having it okay. And then, you know, I kept having to practice it because then it would bump to the next thing. You're like, oh, no,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so it wasn't like, that wasn't the magic formula either that, you know,
yeah.
I wanted it to be.
Right. Well, that's the conditioned orientation towards it, isn't it?
Yeah.
A magic formula produces one particular result.
Right.
Instead of, how could we say it, continuing flow of changing experiences,
yeah.
all that are happening within that love that you're talking about.
Exactly. And just every opportunity, just an opportunity to just keep paying attention, to learn more
mm-hmm.
about this person.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like there's just been every resistance, maybe by conditioning, to support that exploration.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's an exploration of how to love, too, isn't it?
It is. It is. It is, because it's been arising is that, I mean, I know this intellectually, that I cannot stand in the presence of anybody else's pain if I haven't not embraced it myself. Mm-hmm. If I haven't looked into that within me, mm-hmm. I can't. It's not acceptable in my experience.
Yeah, wow.
And that's, you know, it's truly where I want to live.
And so that adds, if I'm following you, that adds a lot of motivation to this exploration you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because every time you get to a hard place in you, it's a place that you can end the suffering there. And that opens you up to that same suffering arising again in you, and also to whatever anybody else who's having that same experience.
Yeah. Like, you know, just to be in the presence of others and for them, I mean, energetically even, to get that whatever they're going through is okay. Mm-hmm. That they don't have to hide it in any way or stuff it. Mm-hmm. And I have had the great fortune to live with two children, my greatest teachers, and I can see that you know how I hadn't seen like that openness or very weak boundaries as a kid. I felt everything, and so as I was raising my kids, it was not okay for them to have certain experiences, because I couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I couldn't go there.
Mm-hmm. And you couldn't handle it in you.
I couldn't handle it in me. Mm-hmm. And it was not okay for them to have that experience.
Because it threatened you.
So threatened me. Mm-hmm. So it's painful to see that, and brings forth compassion, both for them and me. You know, what that was like to be in that kind of, and I know it's just a repeat, you know, what I had as a kid too. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just too painful for them. Mm-hmm. And
that's the karmic piece, isn't it? Getting passed down generation to generation.
Yeah. And as far as I can see, the only thing, the gift I can offer them now is to face that. And myself.
And you.
Yeah. Can't go back and undo that, and who knows?
Yeah, well, you know, look where it's gotten you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good thing. So, you know,
right?
You know, they have the same opportunity.
Yeah, and there's another aspect of all of that weak boundaries that I've been looking at, and I don't. And I don't even know where to go with this, but it. I know that there's a tendency, if something, quote, goes wrong in the environment, or something unskillful happens, there's always immediate want to own it. Like, I did it. You know, I must have done it somehow.
Even if maybe I didn't.
Oh. You know, even if maybe it's not my mind to own.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's this immediate, like, oh God. I think I must have done something. I must have, uh-huh. You know, and start searching for how I caused that certain thing to happen. Mm-hmm. And so I've just been looking that to, you know, and I realize too that it's a place of spiritual maturity to know what's yours to own and what's not yours to own.
That's an interesting way to go with it, because that seems right. That's what little kids do.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. If mom and dad are mad, you know, somehow it's my fault.
Right.
And now I need to find the thing that was wrong so I can fix it.
Exactly. And it's, it's just that little kid thing being acted out over and over again, like, oh my God. And it's a pretty big energy drain, because there's always something, you know, that's not, you know, that's not in control. Mm-hmm. And so, just looking at that too, and that relationship to that boundary issue. And
wow, I think I just got what you're saying. That, so from that place of spiritual maturity, it's like having a grown-up there.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of being a grown-up, is like, or being a parent, either one, is learning how to set boundaries.
Yeah.
And put, like, not in the defensive kind of way we were talking about a minute ago, but in a way that's kind to the human.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. In a way, I don't know if it's, in some ways it's like what I see modeled with the guide when she can, it seems to be very stern with conditioning. She's not owning, you know, she didn't take that action on like she did it. Mm-hmm. And it's, I'm just blanked on it. And, gosh, it was there so clear a minute ago.
So you were saying that you project that onto the guy, that she's not owning, like she can be real stern with conditioning.
Yeah.
She's not taking that on.
Right. Right, yeah, you just, you know, to be, to try and take responsibility for an action that wasn't even yours, that was another person's unskillfulness, or, you know, it's like, where's the kindness in that, you know? It's like acknowledging others' adequacy, and that, you know, there may be an unskillful behavior happened and maybe I didn't even have a thing to do with it, and that person is capable of being with the results of that. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that there's an aspect of caretaking in there too that wants to jump in and feel responsible for all of it all the time.
You know what it sounds like? Boy, this, I hesitate to say this because it's such a wild projection, but it sounds like, I don't have this experience because I was the older sibling, but you know how older kids will jump in to shield younger kids?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
I was the oldest kid too, but I have that going too, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I'll somehow get in there and soften it for everybody.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Which is just, which isn't kind. Mm-hmm. And it's just not necessary. And it's,
yeah, and you said a minute ago, kind of implied when you said a minute ago, is it applies the inadequacy of the other person.
Inadequacy of other folks. Mm-hmm. So that's just something I'm looking at.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Okay. Well, it really goes with that openness and that boundaries place, doesn't it? Because that really is what's required, it seems like.
Yeah.
Is someone, instead of a child who doesn't understand how things work, mm-hmm. and can't see the difference between like conditioning and life, for example, and so can't filter the things that are coming in, just has to either be open or shut.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between that and someone who knows the deal,
yeah,
and can say, can filter for like a younger person, can filter, no, that doesn't have to reach that person because that's just conditioning. That's
right.
We don't have to, that's just going to be painful and unhelpful.
That's the whole thing, just being in the presence of someone who knows the deal.
Who knows the deal.
You know?
And has the power to choose what goes in and what doesn't go in.
And exactly. And can just stand back long enough to, you know, check in, to know the deal and not to just, mm-hmm. you know.
You know, and if there is anything to be owned, it could happen there.
Yeah.
Not over here, not
exactly.
With a little one.
Exactly.
Say, yeah, okay, I can see that was totally unskillful. Thank you. Got it. I'm going to see how I do next time. but there doesn't have to be any, you know, because if it gets, that's kind of neutral. I mean, that just, you know, hits and lands and okay, thank you, and next. But then if it slides past, if we get identified and step out of that, you know, that place, that kind of large spiritual mentor awareness place, then slides past that into that kid, and then suddenly it becomes about that was wrong and bad and you know all the things that are so hurtful.
Right.
And also they keep any. I mean, if we want to talk about just changing behaviors in the future, makes it impossible for that to happen. You know, because it's not this that grown-up place. That's the place where it can be taken in and actually like that information and something to be done with it.
Yeah.
Not down here.
Right.
Because that's just all that was bad, and I've got a. Your shields up, and I just got to hide out and hope it never happens again, and that's not going to produce anything.
Yeah. So so far the only behavior and the behavior change I've come upon about it is to just breathe.
Breathe.
You know, and to just step back a little bit.
Get
before,
here.
Yeah, before I jump into, the fray with,
Yeah, that's good. I've been working on that too. Don't act out of it for a while.
Right.
Let's just sit tight. Keep the mouth shut.
Right. Or the email closed.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh God, every time I, allow less than 5 minutes between the, stimulus and the response, it's like, oh Lord. I wish we could reel that back in.
Uh-huh.
So, anyway. It's all fun.
It's all helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Brian.
I've been looking a little bit about kind of how my emotional experiences get composed.
Composed.
So I'm going along in life and I'm experiencing sensations continuously. And it seems like when a certain set of sensations arises, it can support some sort of story. And often a bunch of different stories.
Mm-hmm.
And they all kind of come in and start vying for some attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is going on because of this, and because you are this, and this is happening,
mm-hmm.
and these judgments
mm-hmm.
need to be in place. And then as soon as I get hooked by one of those stories, then I'm having some emotion.
Right.
And so...
And then that keeps it going, doesn't it? Because there's sensations that come with that emotion that get triggered. Meaning gets attached to that again. Here comes the next part of the story. And you're safely off in the land of story instead of here with the sensations.
Mm-hmm. So the tiny little kernel of something that is real, just the sensations that I'm having,
mm-hmm.
then become the foundation for this big,
huge
construction.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's ultimately this on this tiny foundation, this huge structure
mm-hmm.
of experiences erected.
Mm-hmm.
The example for me that always stands out is that I just live in a world that's built slightly shorter than I would like it. So my entire life is just kind of like crooking my neck a little bit farther than it is comfortable for my neck, and so then
you gotta duck under things and stuff.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so the muscles, if I'm at work and there's a counter and
it's always too
low. Counter, I'm bending over a little bit, and the neck can only deal with a couple hours of that, and then it starts to get tension in around like the collarbone and
uh-huh.
across the throat and whatnot, and just the muscles are fatiguing. And there are those sensations, but they're close enough to the sensations that arise when I'm frustrated,
mm-hmm.
that the narrative that when you're experiencing frustration
uh-huh.
can come and grab me. It's
uh-huh.
just believable enough that
yeah.
those are related. And then, of course, once that has my attention, I'm looking for something that could have frustrated me in the past. And
to support the story.
Exactly. And life being what it is, there's always something. I can always go, that thing over there that I actually haven't thought about for several hours because it wasn't important at the time and it is important now. Actually, that's wrong in some way. Or that's, and then it's off and running. And then I have, as you say, then there are sensations related to having been hooked by that evaluation that, I am frustrated. And then the full set of sensations related to frustration arises, and now it's really believable, and
uh-huh.
it seems really real.
It's interesting to consider that the believability of something is dependent on the sensations. That there has to be, it's like there has to be like a, it's kind of a physical reality that everything is based on, that we're referring to. It's just that conditioning has to have our attention on just like one step away from that, on the meaning instead of on the sensations,
mm-hmm.
to take us off into this world where I can just keep telling stories all forever and ever.
And it depends heavily on that sort of feedback loop that
mm-hmm.
once I believe something is true of the world, then that causes sensations to arise in response to that.
Mm-hmm.
And at every stage, the sensations are real. That is actually the experience that I'm having.
Sensations are actually there.
Yeah.
But the meaning that's getting put to it is extra.
Exactly. That all of the, you know, and that the meaning that got me is just the one that got me.
Mm-hmm.
There were 100 waiting in line to offer themselves up as a potential meaning for this. You know, it doesn't actually, none of those meanings has anything to do with the sensations other than the fact that the sensations happen to sort of fit the profile that they know will allow them to get their process started.
Yeah, it's funny too, because conditioning is back there. Like you say, it's got a whole deck of these stories, and it's just trying. What flavors are you going to go for today? Well, that didn't really work, and oh, there's one.
I can remember being in the kitchen one time. I was mopping the kitchen, and I actually like mopping. So there was nothing really to go on about that. You know, even that didn't even touch on any of my major conditioning around whatever I'm doing in my life. And just sitting there in the recognition that I was just under siege for something, you know, the entire duration of mopping was just another thing being tried, and just going, I'm really not interested in this. And then it starts going up, bumping up levels. So now it's got to be upsetting that I'm under siege, that, you know, all of these things are being tried on me. Now, is that the thing that's going to get me? You know, and it just can jump level to level to level. There's always a second plane and a third plane and a fourth plane.
And would you say, like, so that's such an interesting situation. So you're mopping. So you obviously were going for the story. You didn't get hooked by the story because they kept dropping in. Would you say that your attention was on the sensation?
Well, my experience has been, and it was there, is that the challenge is to be able to accept all the sensations that are going on.
Right.
And then also be able to accept that all of the stories are going on. There's also nothing wrong with that. And then keeping the attention on that, not accepting link between the two.
Yeah, so you're staying aware of what everything is. This is sensation, this is story. Instead of losing the awareness of what's actually happening and going into a place where something the conditioning is giving you is real.
Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, attending to it rather than giving it my attention.
Yeah, attending to it. So that implies you're outside of it, aware of it, with your attention on it, instead of inside it with your attention
with it,
yeah, gone, it's kind of disappeared into it. No awareness of the attention, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sort of on it versus with it.
Mm-hmm. On it versus with it.
This big challenge of keeping track of what's going on, and, you know, this sort of the joy of being in a place that encourages us to practice that is developing the ability to maintain that. You know, it's like spending a lot of time at the gym, and then, you know, your friend calls you up and says, "Hey, I got a move. Can you come lift these heavy boxes?" And discovering, like, actually, I can.
No problem.
Mm-hmm. You know, and just going, "Oh, okay, this is going on. All of this is fine." And if I just be here and attend to what's going on, and, you know, it's got to change. A new set of sensations is arising in every moment, and a new set, you know, a new giant deck of stories is arising to try and grab the attention, and that's just going to be continuously happening until maybe it won't, you know, maybe it'll mellow out at some point in the future, but right now this is the experience, and it's okay.
And that's okay. And in that okayness, I'm projecting, that's where the space is there to just attend to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the other thing that has come up for me is just the you know, just the faith that I'm going to be equal to having that experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to keep going on, and it's going to keep being okay if I'm just willing to embrace it rather than retreating away from it.
That you are up to that, you're adequate to that. Yeah. Thank you. Cameron.
No, that thing about meaning, I think looking at it after I had a processing session with Sherry on one, I think it was a Thursday night session here, where I was talking about how I had been really excited and really up about something, and then I was really down. And she was pointing out that what was happening was the energy was changing. You know, and it was really a great kind of thing, because it was clear that what was happening was that I was taking that personally. I was making it mean something. And that was what was taking me into the down or the depressed mm-hmm. place.
So it's exactly what we were talking about. So just a moment ago. That energy going down is basically a change in how your body feels.
Right. So the sensations are what is part of just what's happening. You know, it's just stuff. It's just energy, or mm-hmm. it's just, you know,
it's the body interacting with
just things happening. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the meaning is me attaching me taking it personally mm-hmm. by translating those kind of physical realities, if you will, quote unquote, whatever, and running it through usually the conditioned system and translating it into what it means, which generally speaking, like we just heard, is kind of fits in with some story.
Yeah, and it's I liked how you said that. It's although I can't remember exactly how you said it, but there's a me doing that translating.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It looks like what we were just talking about being aware of attention, but it actually isn't. So there's a place where all that's happening, and you can be attending to it, and where the sensation, where what's going on, where the meaning and the story that's coming in. So that's one experience. The other one is there being a me, mm-hmm. who is, and a me is not aware. A me is only aware of their little perspective, which is basically a story.
Mm-hmm.
And so a me interpreting those sensations according to a particular point of view. Mm-hmm. Two really different experiences.
Well, and it seems like it's the me. When the me comes in, that's where the meaning comes.
Meaning.
The meaning is attached. The meaning could be different for different people.
Yeah.
But the fact that we like to give it meaning is what we do, and the meaning that comes out of it is filtered through the conditioning. So the meaning is really the me. Me.
Yeah, I like that, because that makes total sense, because the me already believes it.
Already believes it. Yeah, what other story is it going to
have? I mean, that's what a me is, basically, believing a particular perspective.
Exactly.
And so anytime we're looking through a me, we're only going to see what that perspective sees. And so it appears as if the meaning is happening over here.
Right.
You know, they just did something. And that means something, but it doesn't. It's preloaded. It's already in the me who's looking.
That's why it's the meaning. and so it's kind of how we make the things that happen actually reinforce the meaning,
mm-hmm.
because it looks like it's real because of the story we see when we look at it.
Look, it's right there.
Everybody would see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then of course, you know, if we really asked them, they wouldn't.
But
we never do, because that messes up our little program.
Well, and it's part of the reason that we have the interaction sometimes with people that are so shocking. It's like, how could you possibly see it this way? I mean, it's so clear.
Uh-huh.
And they're not. Their meaning
it's
is
completely different.
Something different based on what they have learned to believe about these certain things that are going on.
Yeah, and it's fascinating, because that's true, that their meaning is completely different, but the process that's happening is exactly the same.
Exactly the same.
Creating a me who is looking, creating meaning, mm-hmm. and the separation comes from meaning, mm-hmm. and the relationship with conditioning that happens in that.
Mm-hmm. And the trouble is when we don't understand or we forget that that's the process we're doing, and we're actually believing that the meaning we are seeing
is real. That's good, isn't it? So just like we were saying a moment ago, we have to remember what's our sacral moments. Actually, we have to remember what's the deal.
Yeah.
We have to remember and be able to see the process is happening right now, which is always on the level of
right.
independent of meaning.
Right.
There's a process of meaning making happening right mm-hmm. now. There's a process of me making right now.
Mm-hmm.
A process where stuff that is not actually happening is getting stuck to sensations.
Yeah.
That's always the level that the awareness is on when we're not in it.
Mm-hmm.
If on the other level, well, they just did that, and that means this, and now I'm going to do this. That's the other, that feels like awareness.
Yeah.
But it actually isn't. It's just being in the story.
Yeah, and the challenge is exactly what you said. It's a knee-jerk. I mean, the mm-hmm. meaning is in the sensations because it's preloaded, like
yeah.
you said. And so to you said you have to be aware in the moment it's happening. Whew, that's the, you got to really be on top of your game
yeah.
to get on that really quickly because it's happening just like that.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, it seems instantaneous.
Yeah, and that's why sometimes when we sit with it after it's happened, we can go, oh, I see that's what was going on, but uh-huh. I didn't see it before I opened my mouth.
Yeah, that's the thing we were joking about a minute ago, don't get sinned.
Yeah, don't get sinned.
Because
yeah,
it's true. I mean, for someone who's not doing awareness practice, well, I don't know, hard to say. I mean, maybe there would be an awareness that would come, but it's almost guaranteed someone who's paying attention, that at some point that's going to fall apart
yeah.
if we're attending to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it might take a really short amount of time or it might take a longer amount of time,
mm-hmm.
depending on whether we've been through this before and we've seen through
mm-hmm.
it before and all that. But if we, you know, so I'm having this whole experience, and if I'm attending to it from this place that we're talking about, even if it's seeming real as I'm doing that,
mm-hmm.
it's like picking at it, poking holes in it, and taking mm-hmm. it apart, and eventually it's just going to fall apart. Like you say, when you see, oh, that's there's nothing to that. I'm just
mm-hmm.
making up a bunch of stuff. But we have to be willing to
mm-hmm.
sit there and apply the attention in that way in order to have that
mm-hmm.
experience.
And what I'm really getting is what I got before, but I'm getting it even deeper as we're talking about this, is that it's really in the meaning where the spin is being put, where the diversion or the little trail away from
mm-hmm.
just sensations and is. So, I mean, it seems like we could always look at what meaning we're attaching to it if we can, you know, look in that direction pretty quickly. And you know, if it feels real familiar, which a lot of times it does, of course, we're not going to put a meaning onto it that just doesn't fit with
mm-hmm.
how we have always seen life.
Mm-hmm.
It, that seems like the place where we can start to see it's going off.
Yeah.
You know, the wheel's coming off.
Yeah, and like you said, it has to be quickly.
Very.
Because, you know, the way the system's designed is there's the sensation and the meaning gets attached and then I respond.
Yeah.
You know, so I get the email, there's I hit send and then it's gone and then oh my God. And that produces a whole nother set of sensations and then I'm responding to that. And it's kind of constantly got me, you know, off kilter. I keep getting hit from different directions with these sensations that have meaning, and I can't get my footing.
Yeah, it's like socks in the washer.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just all over the place, and I can't get
yeah.
around it. And but if we like that behavior change that was mentioned earlier, I'm going to breathe.
Yeah.
That does something to
yeah.
it. You know, that stops it. And, you know, and then that changes that relationship because it has
mm-hmm.
to be fast enough to keep our attention consumed so that we never wake up to what's happening.
Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about emails, I could see that that's a place that it could happen a little bit easier than if you're dealing with somebody in person. Because all you have is these words.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if a person is delivering the words and they're smiling or they're very relaxed,
it's harder.
Different than when you just see these words that say, I don't want you to do this or something.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, if it's a kind of a seems a little bit appointed kind of words.
Yeah, there's no other human. It's just you and conditioning.
just you and the meaning you already
uh-huh.
would put to those combination of words in the string that they're in.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
the person, sometimes, that's how sometimes we get I can remember some times, you know, just having this image of somebody in my head that's just this monster. And then I come and have an interaction with the person, and it's like,
what would that be?
that's not what he, she, not like that.
Yeah, or the other one is you do something and you can see that it hurt someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a big wake up call too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing was, as you were talking about that a minute ago, is that comes up for me is it brings in a lot of compassion for the human. Because, you know, you think about the human who's sitting there in the chair or whatever with in front of the computer, and because that person actually is not doing any of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, yeah. It's just, here comes the words.
Yeah.
They never actually land anywhere for the human if they're immediately interpreted.
Uh-huh.
By conditioning standing behind the chair,
yeah,
and you know, directing everything, and then the response comes from conditioning, and the person is just being—it's kind of like an empty vessel, you know, it's just kind of being used by this, but then takes the blame for it for whatever happens. Thank you, Rebecca.
Well, and that to me is why not feeling bad short circuits the whole system.
That's so important, isn't it?
I mean, if we just all like, don't hit send if you feel bad. If you're feeling bad, zip it. You know, and just, that's the equivalent of breathing. And and it sort of takes us back, full circle to the first conversation about, so I wake up in a bad mood. Okay, as long as I don't feel bad about feeling bad. Then there's nothing, you know,
then it's totally fine.
And mm-hmm. and that place where we are when in that moment is like, to me, it is the ground of authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's you know, so we make meanings, we're little meaning making machines, we do that. As long as we don't feel bad, there's no problem, you know. And it's just such an escape hatch mm-hmm. out of that, you know, being bombarded and being used. You know,
that's it. Don't forget where you're going, but yeah. I just want to underline that you said that's the ground of authenticity.
Yeah.
That place.
Yeah.
Unconditional acceptance.
Yes, unconditional.
Where it's just allowed. That's the place of.
Yeah. Authenticity. No matter what's going on,
mm-hmm.
that's allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and unconditional acceptance is it perfect.
Yeah. You know what I just saw that does is. That basically, if that's what's going on, we're not identified.
Yeah.
We're not identified in the person having a bad mood or the person who's in pain or anything.
Right.
We're identified, if you could say, with that acceptance. And that just makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, it really does. That's, you know, and I was listening to a recording of God knows what, you know, there's so many, but it was an interaction that happened in this room anyway. I just remember it was Ashwini and Sherry's voice and other people. But the image was said that it's like the karmic wheel has just hundreds of hooks, like we've been talking about, you know, to hook us into mm-hmm. whatever sensation or meaning or story or whatever. And it's like we, you know, we're sitting here kind of removing the hooks as we become aware of them, mm-hmm. you know, that, and we're working with them, we're practicing and all that. And the shortest way out of that is not to care.
Not to care.
Yeah.
Do you mean not to care if we get hooked?
Not to care. It's sort of like the be running as fast as you can when you fall flat on your face.
I see. Huh.
Just not to be worried about it. In other words, okay, is this a karmic hook? Is this, now am I hooked here? Am I, you know, is this good karma or bad karma? Is this action, you know, going to take me forward towards mm-hmm. the Uber or backwards? You know, it's like just not to care,
mm-hmm.
not to get engaged in that process,
mm-hmm.
Because that's the biggest hook of all. In a way.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? That's a good way of saying it. That is also a hook.
Yeah.
It just seems like it's not, because it's a hook that's unhooking things.
Yeah.
But that is another hook.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. The way I was saying it to myself as you were saying that is it's one step removed.
Yeah.
From where the work is actually happening.
Yeah.
Anytime we're thinking like that, it's one step removed. Instead of just responding, here it is, no, you know, here it is, I'm letting go, you know, that's let go of.
Yeah.
If we're a subject, stands that right? Yeah, subject to it. Where we're somehow in charge of that, deciding about it, we're no longer there where it's actually happening.
Yeah, because then we're just a me who's trying to remove the hooks again.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, and the other thing that has just emerged in this conversation, and I was seeing it a little bit earlier this morning, is that if we didn't have the structure of this practice, and you know, I don't know if that would be possible, because what all of this presumes, you know, is that eventually something's gonna wake us up, or we're gonna bump into something, or somebody's gonna point out, you know. So we have that kind of mega level, overarching support container, if you will, that is Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. And if that, you know, if that weren't in some way manifested through this practice, then we wouldn't have the luxury of not caring.
I think you're right. I don't think we'd be able to.
Yeah.
Because we could see if this is what you're saying, that we start off with the principle, you know, an understanding that what is happening in the mind is not real. You know, that it's possible, well, everything, you know, that it's possible to suffer, that, and how that happens. And there's a whole framework for our experience.
Yeah.
And if within that framework, we're all practicing within that framework.
Yeah.
And within that framework, sooner or later, it's gonna pop.
Yeah.
Because it really isn't real.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that framework, and you're not, there's no way to apply the attention in a way that will pop it.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. So we really, I mean, it just evokes so much gratitude for that, the framework.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, today's Easter, and I was thinking this morning about all the formation, you know, like the institution, the church that was so influential in my life in really good way, I got to say. And just that same thing for me when I was this age, and then me when I was this age, I had this kind of framework. And then me when I was this age and me at this level, I had this kind of framework. And so it's so like life has been so generous and so wise and such a good teacher and such a good provider of everything I ever really needed in supporting. And this is where I am now. And I have this amazing framework. And it's, you know, so it's just, you know.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever read much biography, but, you know, I have. And there's, like, you might hear the story of someone who maybe, like, did a lot of good things, was a really powerful person and did a lot of good things, like, say, politically.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, hard to know, but I often project with those that, like, if someone is living their life within a, like, political framework, what the result is a political result.
Mm-hmm.
But it might do a lot of good, but it's still within this framework that is bound by, like, assumptions in the reality of the way things are and these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've just seen that, as you were saying, that what happens for us really is dependent upon the framework that we are living with
it. It really is. It's everything.
Mm-hmm.
It really is everything. Mm-hmm. Because, and there's a quote that came through recently about the, I don't know, it came through on my recorder, sorry, y'all wouldn't know that, but it was something like, it was a quote by Sherry about what we give our attention to is what all life has to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if our attention is on the political framework, then insights can only drop in within that political framework.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not going to be looking at, like, going beyond the illusion of a separate self in that context. I mean, looking at how to do the right thing, for example.
Yeah. And so as we kind of, you know, I don't know whether it's busting through all the you know, we grow. You know, we are in this framework and then we're this. I think that's my experience anyway. And it just feels like the more we are, and again, it's getting to that attitude of mind that seems to facilitate that growth is, you know, whatever life, you know, not reckless abandon, but sort of, you know, just be running as fast as we can when we fall flat on our face.
Yeah, and I think what's going on there in the context of what we're saying, see if you see this also, is that one of the most fundamental frameworks that we are trained to live inside of is self-hate,
mm-hmm.
where everything happens within a framework of good and bad, right and wrong, and whether we're measuring up and all that kind of stuff. And if within that framework, you start off this time saying, you know, it's how important it is not to feel bad.
Yeah.
You know, if we're living in within a context of where it's possible to feel bad because we've done the wrong thing or something, mm-hmm. then everything that happens will happen within that framework.
Yes.
But if we take that framework away, I think, to me, I'm projecting, that's the attitude of mind you're talking about.
Yes, exactly.
I'm just here experimenting.
Uh-huh.
I'm just trying stuff, and I'm seeing what happens, and there's no feeling bad because I'm not living within that framework.
Yeah.
That's what really starts to open up all that possibility.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, this is a good system.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's our time. Thank you very much. Thank you.